Hi everyone, this is Paul Miller and you're listening to the Hotspur podcast.
Yeah, welcome to a very special edition of the Hot Spurs podcast. It is Monday, the 17th of February, 2014, and once again, we've got an extra special guest this week. It is none other than Paul Miller, who played for Spurs for about 10 years through the 70s and 80s. Absolute pleasure to have him on the show. How are you doing, Paul?
Yes, I'm fine, thanks, Steve. Yeah, very good.
Well, thanks ever so much for coming on. Every time we have a guest, they're always absolutely brilliant, telling us stories of what was like playing for Spurs. And I know that all the fans that listen, they listen to every single word that you say about just dream of pulling on that white shirt. And I always start or at some point put in a question, which I know that all the Spurs fans want to know. And I'm not going to dilly-dally around it this week. I'm going to go straight for it and ask you, what was it like playing against Arsenal?
It was great playing against Arsenal because I was old school, from the Bill Mick when I first joined the club, and you didn't even wear a red tie. So I discuss the other lot down the road,
Never red, that's right.
Right through the youth team and reserves, and even I made my debut against Arsenal at Highbury, which is a special occasion. It's always a great occasion, and something that certainly the London lads always look forward to. And obviously, in the team I played in, two thirds of us were homegrowns. So, we appreciate that even more about that. So, it was really good. It was really good. And obviously, better than we won.
Fantastic. And were there a few victories along the way there?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, not to mention the League Cup and the FA Cup, I remember. I remember winning 3-1 there on New Year's Day to go top of the league. That was a little bit special. Quite a few victories, yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. I mean, obviously, you say there are no red ties. At the moment, the Spurs and Arsenal thing is really, really heated up, isn't it? I mean, there was like 10 years there in the wilderness a little bit, but now it's like, the competitiveness is so, it's back, if you like. And,
we're getting closer. We're getting closer.
Yeah.
I still think there's a bit of a gap.
That's fair enough.
The reason being that, I think a lot of people forget, in the last 5-6 years, we've punched so far about our weight. Man United have got 3 times their earnings.
Yeah.
Arsenal and Man City and Chelsea got 2.5 times their earnings, So we're well punching above our weight and competing in that level. And, until we get a new stadium, it's still going to be that way.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And people, Spurs fans especially, we want our club to do so well. We're so desperate for that success, but then we have to have a little reality check and just think, well, hang on a minute, we're still in this 36,000 stadium. The Champions League, we had it a couple of years ago, but we're striving to get there, and I'm sure we'll do it because we're the ultimate optimists, the Spurs fans, as you know. I've got a question here from Graham Chandler, who asks, does he think that the 82 team would have won the league were it not for the massive fixture congestion at the end of the season? Because I do. Played some fantastic football, but were running on empty. Do you relate to that, Paul?
Yeah, we did. I mean, we had 71 games that year. If you remember rightly, we lost a load of games, half dozen games in January for the snow.
Yeah.
And, in the end, I forget how many it was. But it was ridiculous. We were playing Saturday, Monday, Wednesday, Saturday, 4 games a week. And you've got to remember, the biggest difference of today and then is the pitches.
Yeah.
What you trained on and what you play on. Today, you like carpet every week. We didn't have that luxury. And obviously, we didn't have a 25-man squad. We had 15, 16 players. So, we had lots of injuries. We had a full League Cup run, a full Cupman's Cup run. We competed on four fronts. And the team was fantastic, and that was undoubtedly the best we ever played. I mean, it was a great year, and I do think that was a big, big factor that, you know, the injuries in the end cost us, and you know, you can't keep playing that many games. I mean, today they'd have heart attack, wouldn't they?
You know? No, absolutely. It's amazing, you know. But I bet when you played someone like Liverpool up against Kenny Dalglish and the likes, and the pitch was a bit, you know, cut up, you was like, oh, I fancy this today.
Not really, because we were a footballing team. I mean, you know, obviously Dalglish and Rush were a fantastic pair, and there was many other pairs in those days. You know, Andy Gray, Graham Sharp at Everton, Peter Whiff and Gary Shaw at Villa, and, you know, Woodcock and Charles at Forest. I mean, you know, Mariner of Brazil, not least at Ipswich. I mean, it was some terrific pairings in those days.
I've spoken to Kenny Dalglish about yourself, and he was very, very complimentary. You know, I'm not going to use some of the words that he said about you, but he was like, he never liked playing against you. What was that like, playing against those two?
Well, I think what you just said there, the compliment probably to myself and Glenn Roberts, was that no one liked playing against us. You know, today, I think we were gladiators in the old days. We sort of kicked each other out of beer after the year, and there's a great respect between us all when we all meet up now, and it's actually wonderful. But I mean, you know, Dalglish and Russell, obviously Liverpool were the best team of the 80s, but arguably the best team British football was ever produced. So, you know, we competed with them, and so I mean, 85 we beat them 3 times that year. Only one in the league and not to have the League Cup, you know. So, I mean, not many teams did that to them.
And that was when they was actually in their prime, wasn't it? I mean, that sort of period.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that was superb. But we went on tour with Liverpool to South Africa in 1984 and played against a couple of exhibition matches, and we had a great time with them. And Kenny and Graham Souness, they're good friends, they're good guys.
Yeah, no, they're great. I mean, I see Kenny like once a year. He's got a place in Spain with my dad there, and play a bit of golf and that. He's always got a few stories, and I always sort of pester him about what was it like playing against Spurs, and he kind of shivers when I talk about you and Graham Roberts and that. Like, he, like, you know, don't want to talk about it. So no, that's a massive compliment. It's good.
Kenny could give as good as you get. And all the things I mentioned before, they all gave as good as they got. You know, so it was all one way. It went both ways. And, you know, afterwards, shake hands and a beer. That's how it was a very privileged time to play. I think we played in the best of times. I mean, apart from the money today, which is obviously exceptional, you know, we played in the best of times when English football ruled Europe, and we did it predominantly with British players. I mean, we had a couple of Argentinians, we had a couple of Dutch players. Everyone else was British or Irish, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. That's what Mike England said to me, that, you know, when he used to play against the centre-forward, you know, you'd knock each other about, but you'd get up because you didn't want to show that weakness. Whereas, you know, today it's like, you know, they brush past each other and the two of them go down.
Fall over, I mean, absolutely. I mean, you know, the big thing, it was a macho thing, and if, you know, someone smashed you off the ball or, you know, caught you or whatever, you know, you'd look at it and laugh and say, "Is that best you got?" You know, because it really was that. You didn't. The last thing you want to see is the show and let him see you've been hurt. And that was that. That probably worked both ways, you know, because it was, I suppose, a bit of old school and how we were all brought up as well. You know, we were brought up in very working class areas.
Absolutely.
Mostly from poor families. So that's what that created.
Yeah, I can't see Kenny Dalglish like rolling around on the floor going, he's hit me. You know, he'd want to get up and sort of say, you know, Glaswegian stare or whatever.
Yeah.
Davey Elder asks, he had a chat with you at the Chigwell after the John White Memorial game, and he talked about having a winning mentality. Was that just installed in the players, or did management bring that out in individuals?
You know, I was installed in the players from a young age. I mean, I first went to Spurs, and Ron Henry was our junior coach, who's not very well nowadays, and he was a wonderful man. He gave most of us our nicknames. He was a fantastic coach. Actually, he's still a good player as well in the gym when we played there.
Yeah.
And he had this, you know, playing the right way, but, you know, second is nothing. And Ron was really about that, really about winning. And so was Bill Nicholson, you know, and obviously Peter Shews and Berkey Shaw carried that on after that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, Kidd was more of a purist. I mean, Ron really was about winning, and he was a fantastic character. And I think a lot of us owe him a lot. That's from, you know, Glenn Hoddle and, you know, all that came after him.
Yeah, I mean, it's brilliant. With regards to that period, I've got a question. I'll get his name in a minute, but he's asked about, of your medals, of which you run, you know, loads at Spurs. Is there one that you treasure the most?
No, they're all nice, all good. I think, obviously, the first time you play at Wembley in the cup final special, and it's like, you know, with our little kids, you've completed your dream, haven't you? Because we all grew up wanting to play in the cup final.
That's it, yeah.
So once you've done that, and afterwards, they're all, you know, they're all similar. No, I wouldn't say. What I would say is that the UEFA Cup one, which was the hardest competition to win those days, that was like the Champions League in our era.
Yeah.
Where, you know, because what happened, you only got eight decent countries who play football. So in the champion in European Cup and the Cup Winners' Cup, you had one team from each of those nations. In the UEFA Cup, you had three or four from each of those nations. So where you only had half of those teams in the other competitions, in that one, you had 20-odd decent teams. And the year we won it, we beat six champions who won their league that year.
Brilliant.
So it was a fantastic achievement. And I think that would go down, you know, as special, really, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that was James Hunter that asked that. And he's asked another one here, which is, would you have preferred to be a pro now rather than the 80s? Put money aside, Paul.
No, not at all. Not at all. I think they had a fantastic time.
Yeah.
It was a great time, and it was, you know, a special time. And so we grew up with people that we knew from a young age.
Yeah.
I mean, I played with people like Mark Falco and Gary Brooke and, you know, Glenn and Pursuit, and people I know sort of 12, 13 years old. Now, that's special.
Yeah.
And that don't really occur. And also as well, I think, I mean, I'm you know, still at the club now, working on match days. And, you know, 10 or 12 of us sit in the box watching the game from the, you know, the 70s, 80s.
Yeah.
Or the 90s era. And we often say to each other, in 20 years' time, will there be 10 ex-players watching the Spurs match? I don't think so. Not sat together anyway. But we are. And that's a special camaraderie. And, you know, I think we're very fortunate. And that occurred from the era we played. And you say, OK, for money, we did OK, by the way. You know, gave us a great start in life. And yet, you know, it got wet ago and worked, but it gave us a great opportunity, a great stepping stone. But today, no, I prefer to play with you. You can only be good when you play anyway.
Yeah. Can you not see Adi Bayor in the blazer up there, sitting with people having lunch on a Saturday?
No, I can't. I can see him coming back. I can see him come back to the club. But he'll be a special guest. He'll come back, you know, once every other year, or maybe once a year, and then do that.
Yeah.
But a lot of players will come back. I mean, Jermaine certainly will come back on a regular basis.
Yeah.
He loves the club, yeah? I'm sure Michael Dawson will, and one or two others, but you know, generally they won't. They're foreign players. They come for 2 or 3 years, do their stuff, and move on somewhere else. And that's, you know, how it is. That's how the world's changed now.
I mean, you know, whenever I, you know, I'm lucky enough to get, you know, invited into one of the lounges or have a bit of lunch up there, you know, I've said this to previous guests that, you know, all those Spurs boys are so fantastic to talk to. And I know you say the same stories over and over again, a lot of you guys, but, you know, it's brilliant the way that it is done. And, you know, I'm just looking forward to really, you know, this new stadium being built, because, you know, you look at the facilities and it is a bit dated up at White Hart Lane now, and, you know, I'm looking forward to that. You know, when you do go up for the games, do you all sit in the box together and watch the games together?
Yeah, no strangers, just us.
And
as you can imagine, we've all got an opinion.
And does John Pratt, you know, does he just keep going and going? Do you have to say, John, just give us 5 minutes, mate?
Actually, trouble to get a word in, but... As I said, we've all got an opinion. Yeah, Alan Murray, yeah. Pat Jennings, you know, Ozzy, Phil Bill, Martin Chivers, everyone's got an opinion. So you do well to get a word in, which, you know, there's 7 or 8 opinions flying around.
Yeah.
So no, Pratt is not like he can be. No, he has to take his turn, and like everyone else.
No, he's brilliant. He was on a couple of weeks ago, and I've already asked you twice as many questions that I asked him, and I had him on for 45 minutes, so... he was fantastic the way he told his stories.
Yeah.
Oh, he's brilliant.
One of my best friends, yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. One of the questions I asked him was with regards to this programme on Sky, where people go through their best 11 of all time. I'm not going to do that with you. I'm going to change it slightly, because I have had a question from a guy on Twitter called Sarcastic Spurs Fan, and he's asked me, if you was Desert Island Discs time, if you was on Desert Island Discs, You know, you were there on your own on this island, and a tribesman come through the woods and said, we're going to cook you, or you've got to play a game of five-a-side against us, and you've got to choose four other lads to be with you. Now, I know this is putting you on the spot, Paul, and I really do apologise, but you've got to choose a defender, a goalie, a midfielder and an attacker from Spurs history. Have you got any names coming?
Yeah, cool. Well, it's easy. The goalkeeper's easy, it's Pat Jennings.
Yeah.
The defender would have to be Dave McKay.
Yeah.
The striker would have to be Jimmy Greaves.
Yeah.
And the midfield player would have to be Hoddle Ardiles, but I can't separate. So one of them would have to be sub.
Yeah. That's all right. You can have rolling subs. And one more? You got one more?
Was that not five, I give
you? Yeah, it is. I just thought, you know, if you could have one more rolling sub, who would that be?
One rolling sub? Well, sorry, that's my other line, sorry. Let me go for it. We'll get a go for it. That's right. One more rolling sub.
Go on.
Who could obviously play all over the place. I mean, I suppose I'd have to be Steve Perriman.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the skipper and he's... You know, the legend at Tottenham, and he could come and play anywhere anyway, Stevie, so it would be him.
Brilliant stuff. I've got another question here. Terry Hill. I don't know if you know Terry Hill, but I know he's been to a few of the Legends nights, the Hall of Fame nights up there. He asked the question like this. He said, Max, as a nickname, has remained with Paul. What teammates' nicknames are less well-known or more humorous? So, do people call you Max? Are there other nicknames that are less well known or more humorous that you can think of?
Well, everyone had nicknames. I said before Ron Henry named it, but called Mark Falco, Bilko, Gary Brook, Buddha, obviously for obvious reasons. Chris Shooting was always Charmer.
Yeah.
Obviously Glenn was Hod. Danny Thomas was Precious after Precious McKenzie, the weightlifter, yeah?
Yeah.
I don't think who else? Tony Galvin's obviously the Mad Russian. He did a degree in Russian, means crackers.
Right.
I think of a few bad nicknames. That's generally it. I mean, they're all for a reason, and all affectionate nicknames as well.
That's brilliant. Did you ever room with Ozzy Ardiles?
Pardon?
Did you ever room with Ozzy Ardiles on your travels? Share a room with him?
No, I didn't. No.
Because I asked...
We have a room next door. Ozzy's a global ambassador of my investment company that I work with.
Yeah.
And so I go away with Ozzy a lot now to the Channel Islands and one or two other European countries. So I see him a lot.
Because
I didn't room with Ozzy, a few other people, but not Glenn was my main room partner.
Oh, brilliant! Stevie
first.
When I had Graham Roberts on the show, I asked him about rooming with people. He said when he roomed with Ozzy Ardiles, and I said like the room must have been full of smoke because he was like Cheney back in the day.
Yeah. He liked a cigarette. No, I wouldn't say he was chain smoke. He liked a cigarette. It was more of a casual one. Yeah, I mean, he liked a cigarette before the game.
Yeah.
You know, on the bus on the way to the away games.
Yeah.
It was really just to get his nerves calmed and whatever, you know. Listen, it made me feel, I've never smoked. If it made me a better player, you know, not Ozzy, I would have smoked. he's a fantastic footballer, Ozzy, and he changed our club, really.
Yeah.
Changed our club for the good.
I mean, great times back then. I was a little bit too young because I was born in 76, so I was only two when they came over. I've never asked this question, but, you know, how was it making the song back in 81? Was that good fun?
I think it was destined to happen. We'd had a couple of years of trying with Ozzy making the headlines that wanting to play there. I think when you're drawn at home... In all the games, you know, not leaving London until the semi-final. And the biggest thing for me, what we knew was going to happen, is the quarter-final. There's seven first-division teams and one third-division team called Exeter, and we draw them at home. When things happen like that, you believe it's fated, yeah? And obviously the great Wolves, you know, game at Hillsborough where the club Thomas gives a dodgy penalty in the last minute in injury time, so it could all be about him and not other people. And then obviously for me, the greatest atmosphere I've ever played in my life, which is the replay at Highbury. If you ever speak to anyone who's there, that is undoubtedly the finest atmosphere you've ever Tottenham match that anyone's ever been to, because it was a midweek game. Unbelievably, the FA made the replay at Highbury, which had 60,000.
Yeah.
We must have had 45,000 there. Because we scored two early goals in the first half, and Ricky then got one, just after half time, with half hour to go, you're free up, we know we're going to Wembley. And it's one of the few games you actually can always enjoy. But the place was jumping. We could feel the vibration on the pitch. And if you ever asked any of your friends who were at that game, I'm sure you've got quite a few friends who were there,
yeah,
they will all say that's the best atmosphere they've ever felt. I mean, it's better than even the UEFA Cup final when we won it, in my opinion. And most, yeah, and mostly most of the lads, you speak to most of the lads, they'll all agree with that.
I mean, I can relate to that with regards to 91, when, the game that everybody, remembers, the big one was the semi-final.
Yeah,
I mean, that was just a magical day, especially, we were mid-table, let alone where we are at the moment, fifth, and, they're third, and we're grumbling about and being so much, they were miles ahead of us in that game, and that was such a brilliant game to win, because we didn't just win that, we were by far the better side, and it was just a brilliant performance.
I was there on the day, it was special.
But I was trying to ask you there, Paul, what was it like making the single with Chaz and Dave?
Well, we made two, didn't we? We made two and an album.
Yeah.
It's strange because we went into a studio at Upper Regent Street and, Great Portland Place, sorry. And we're all a little bit, nervous, if you like. We're not used to singing, are we? We can sing on the coach, whatever. But in the end, they felt we were a bit cold, and Chaz and Dave then sent out some beer and wine. And about an hour later, after consuming quite a bit, the lads didn't care then.
Yeah.
Ozzy did his piece. In one, on track Ozzy, and it was fantastic. I mean, they were great lads to do it with, and obviously, the Top of the Pops thing, that helped the whole thing really, helped make it special,
There's a fantastic bit of footage of you guys on the bus. I think it was after you'd won the cup final, and you were on the coach coming back, and you all decided to start singing it. And then Ozzy's line came up, and you all just pointed at him, and he did it perfectly, and it was just magical.
Yeah, I don't remember that, by the way. That's one of me. So many things happening, but that's wonderful. It would have happened like that, because we're a very close team, it would have been difficult to have done that.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. And then, 92 again, you did another song. We won't have time to talk about that. But that was, that was another one where, as I understand it, it wasn't a great, a QPR were the better side in many, many moments in the first game or whatever. But,
No, they weren't, actually. They weren't the better side. I mean, you've misunderstood that.
Yeah.
Peter Hucker was man of the match in the first game. That's their goalkeeper, yeah?
Yeah.
So they got out of jail in the first game.
Oh, okay.
They equalised in there. They equalised in, in the last minute. Probably the only chance to have a goal. I mean, they had a shot of goal the whole
time. That must have been a QPR fan that told me that then. Sorry about
Ray
that.
Ray Clements probably had two of the easiest days of his life in both those games.
Yeah.
In Santa, the second game they pressed and pressed, but they didn't actually create much. I've seen the highlights of it, but if you have to look at the stats, I bet they had two or three shots in two games at the lot.
Yeah, but
so that's the actual fact of the good games.
Yeah, and so brilliant win the second one, and then the final game, we're going into detail here, is the UEFA game, where you scored obviously in the first leg. But must be fantastic, scoring in a final, what have you. Just a shame it was, one of the first leg and not the second leg, I suppose. But,
it's a funny thing, because I'd been injured for the third of the season with a bad knee injury. I did it in my cartilage, and he had lots of problems with it, complications. I didn't get back in the team until January, and I was still not fit then. But we needed, I needed to come back in, and I had to warm up in the gym for half an hour before every game. I could hardly run,
yeah,
and before training, just happened like that. So, you know, I was getting stronger as the season went on. I didn't want the season to end.
Yeah.
By the time we got to UEFA Cup final, I was now feeling quite fit, you know, and not having to warm up so much, get the knee going. I was also in dispute about my contract at the time with the own chairman, Evan Scholar, who was being a bit of a prat, really. And so, you know, I suppose when I scored, it answered lots of things, really, you know. And it was just, you know, I mean, I didn't really, you know, take too much of your credit because it was a great team performance. I think that biggest disappointment about the first league, and, you know, if you speak to Mark Falco and Steve Arsfield, you know, they'll go on what I'm saying. You know, we missed so many chances. They could have had two or three goals each that night. They were prolific in those days. They were both great strikers and goal scorers. But they missed so many chances because we actually slaughtered Anderlecht. And I know in the last, you know, the last minute, you know, Parks just tumbled one and they equalised. It's funny how things change around.
Yeah.
But I mean, we came away 1-1, gutted really. And yet, you know, you first over the cup, you forgot for you think, well, great result. But we were gutted. The game, the tie should have been over. We should have won the cup then. We should have been 3 or 4 in front, and they had been all over. You know, they would have got that mile away. But one thing we knew is they were going to play better. So it was a really, you know, it was really an anti-climax. It's good for me personally, but you know, the anti-climax. We all knew we had a fantastic chance to have won it that night, and we didn't. Obviously, as it's a case proved in the second leg, they came out and bloody slaughtered us the first half.
Yeah.
But actually, the first hour, really, we couldn't get a ball off them. And they went one up, and, you know, it could have been some move, maybe two as well. So it's just funny how football works like that. And obviously, we got back in it, and Robert got a late goal, and obviously, penalties and the rest of the history of Parks, he was fantastic.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a good memory, but, you know, there's lots of good memories there from Spurs, not only that one.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. And, you know, just finally, with regards to the current side, you know, some people have wanted me to ask you about Tim Sherwood and should he stay, should he go? I don't like that question because I just think that, you know, he's the manager. There's nothing we can do about it, whether you like him or you don't. And I don't really get the whole don't like him business because he's the manager. He's been at Spurs for several years now. He's lost that Arsenal connection because he wants so much. You can see him on the touchline. He wants so much for Spurs to do well. So forget that. And let's just get behind him and stop asking, you know, who do we want next year? Do you know what I mean?
I've known since a young man. I was finishing my career at Watford. Coming towards the end, and Tim was a young man making his debut, so I played with Tim at Watford. Not many games, but played with him and knew him as a young boy. Yeah,
yeah.
He's come through the same period as a young goalkeeper called David James as well.
Yeah,
and Tim was very single-minded. He's a London lad. He was cocky and confident, and you know you knew he had a chance. And obviously he went to Norwich, did a decent then, and then also the Blackburn when they won the league.
Yeah,
he was skipper, so then came to Tottenham and. I didn't go too well. He was playing the poor side at Tottenham, to be fair, when he came there.
Yeah.
He wasn't the best of sides. But, you know, I think they won a cup in May and whatever. But Tim is a single-minded person, a strong person, and he was one of the ideal people to take over after, you know, AVB's problems.
Yeah.
Because he's a good communicator. He won't beat about the bush. And the players obviously have seen him around, respect him. And as you know now with players, they immediately go on Google and see who you are, what you've done. So they've had a bit of respect, certainly in the Neswood of their careers.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done well. He's done fantastically well because I think he's made it plain and simple. The only mistake he's really made is against Arsenal, where he went gung-ho. I think he should have played 5 in midfield instead of 2 strikers. But he's lived and learned. And I think he had the result with United and got a bit carried away. But, you know, he's obviously learned from that. And against a good side, we can't play to up front. We have to play one. But I think he's done well, he's spoken well, he's been precise, confident. At the moment, you know, he's in the frame. I mean, I don't have this thing, we don't qualify for the Champions League, that we should get someone else, because I don't think, you know, there's lots of great talent out there as managers and coaches. I actually think a lot of managers and coaches are overrated. Certainly didn't do a lot for me when I played. They helped, the managing coaches I had. But, you know, I think it's all about players.
Yeah.
And it's just making players feel the right way. And, you know, I don't hold them. Certainly, having certain Dutchmen and Germans coming back to the club, whatever. I think we've got a good man. And, you know, and he's got a season and a half contract, and give him another year because you know this is not his team. Give him a chance to delve into the transfer market. To be honest, we've all 7 players, and very few of them have shown anything at all.
Yeah.
They've all been quite poor. That's a fact.
Yeah.
None of them have been outstanding. So they're all right. It takes some time. I mean, one of the big things and problems we've had, which Tim, I'm sure, knows that, is, you know, we had six out, seven in. So that's 13 player turnover. That's after dressing.
Yeah.
That's a massive amount for any business, let alone the football business.
And not just that, Holtby and Townsend, they're new, Danny Rose come back. So that's 10, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and the ostracised Adebayor. So, you know, a lot of problems there. And yeah. I'm just saying it's too many, and it's taken a long while for them to settle down. Some have settled quicker than others. Some haven't settled at all. You know, it's a disgrace, actually. But, you know, that's how the game is nowadays. All I'm saying is, let's see how we go into running. We've got decent running. We haven't got too many big games, you know, against the top sides. They're all going to be beating each other. Everyone's going to be beating each other, actually, including the bottom side. It's a fantastic year for everything, you know, for the top. I mean, there's only three who can win it. Maybe Liverpool's out, so I don't think so, but certainly Liverpool can catch Arsenal. And then maybe we can as well, you know. But I think it's totally unfair to say if you don't finish fourth, then Tim's not got the job. Then who's going to be better to come in? Then they've got to start again.
Yeah.
And the other thing as well, you know, whoever comes in, especially one that, if it's one that high profile, well known, they can start saying to the chairman, there's 100 million I want to spend. You know, we haven't got 100 million because our priority at the moment is to build this new stadium. And that's a bigger priority than any player.
Yeah.
Because it's about the future, and it's Spurs about the future, not about next season. And we certainly don't want to see us going bust.
Yeah.
Like a number of other clubs have done in the past, we get this stadium built and done, and we turn over the money, which we know we can turn over, we've got the wealth of supporters per capita, arguably in the world. You know, we'll be fine. But I mean, we just got to get through it. And I think Tim's the ideal man. So that's my opinion about him. And I hope he stays.
Yeah. I mean, this is what I said last week about be careful what you wish for with regards to getting rid of people all the time. And also, you know, we need a little reality check also sometimes. And, you know, let's just get behind the man and, you know, stop asking constantly, you know, what about next season? What about, you know, let's just get behind him and see what we can do this season. And, you know, let's...
I've got another thing on that as well. Yeah. I'm obviously a great friend of Harry. Read that when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And he rattles all the time about English managers, English coaches. I totally agree with him.
Yeah.
We keep bringing Johnny Foreigner in. And by the way, you know, there is a room for foreign players, as we had with Ozzie and Ricky.
Mm-hmm.
But not keep bringing him in, you know, willy dilly, you know. I mean, it ruins things at the end of the day. And it's a whole new... their own sort of approach to it, and they've all got their own ways. And I take that after Swansea, giving Gary Monker a try after Loudrup, who obviously got carried away with his own success. Yeah, you know, and the record he had, he was lucky to last that long, Loudrup. But I'm saying they've gone for a lad who's been, you know, been there a long while, been doing his rank, doing his bits for the juniors and reserves. Good luck to them. And I'm saying Tim and Les have been doing the same thing. They've done their apprenticeship.
Yeah,
and they know the club backwards. They know the players, and that's the only continuity we've got. The players ain't going to be the continuity because they're going to come and go all the time. There won't be anyone staying there longer than 4 or 5 years. Trust me, in the near future, days of testimonials have gone in today's world.
So of all you lads who set up in the box, who's got the best Spurs knowledge? You're all good.
We're all very knowledgeable about all from the 50s onwards. Obviously, you know, people like Chris Jones remember the 50s better than we do. We weren't born.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're all very, very knowledgeable about the club
and the players we played. And just finally, have any of you got a better ear with Levy, or are you all sort of kept at a distance because he doesn't want you meddling too much?
No, I mean, Daniel's all right. Daniel's fine. We see him. Obviously, pass him on the stairs. I've seen him on some of the away games, in European trips. He's fine. He's a Spurs man. He's very quiet. He's introverted. He runs a good ship, and he gets on with his business privately.
Brilliant.
There's nothing wrong with that. That's how he chose to do things. Daniel's fine. And he's done a good job for the club.
Yeah.
On the battle after it was really sinking from the last one around it.
Yeah.
So he's done a fantastic job.
Oh, brilliant. Well, listen, Paul, it's been fantastic having you on the show. You know, it's so fantastic speaking to the old Spurs boys, and you know, you've lived the dream, and you know, it's what all the fans listening to this were they hang on every word, and it's just brilliant. So listen, thanks ever so much, and you know, next time I'm up you know, in one of the lounges or whatever, I'll come and say hello. But if you, like I said to John Pratt, you know, if you get a bit bored up there one day, come down to the Bel and Air and you know, we'll buy you a beer, no problem.
Lovely, thank you very much.
All right, thanks ever so much, Paul.
Thanks,
bye. Bye.